For those who have been a part of the Church of the Nazarene for any length of the time, one of the things you will learn early on, and especially over the years, is the Church of the Nazarene is it's a very small world. It's a very close family, and it doesn't take long, even for guests that you've just met, to find some connections and other people in the Nazarene world. And as soon as I saw Ecuador on the list of things, I knew I had to ask about the Wilson family. And David Wilson has actually come here a couple different times, usually when Reuben is preaching and filling in. A lot of times David and Kaylee will come along with. And so my first question was, oh, so you know the Wilsons. And I remember David when he was a baby. So I've known David for 4 years, I think, is really our interactions and developing that friendship. And but the mission world out there, they are an important part of the Nazarene family. And so today it's a pleasure and honor to have family visiting from other parts of the world to share with us today. Now we have a
video. So we have actually in January of 2014, almost 10 years ago, we landed in Europe and eventually settled in Portugal. And that was our assignment, to live in Portugal. But our ministry was much broader than that. And so having lived there, we, of course, learned Portuguese. Now, we want to thank you for the privilege we have had of serving in the church over these many years. We started, is it not working? We started in 1994 in Ecuador, and we, of course, learned Spanish when we were in, there we go. So thank you. We learned Spanish when we were in Ecuador because that's what they speak in Ecuador. We were there for 13 years. And after 13 years, we returned to the United States, and I co-pastored with my father. My father was pastor all my life, and he had started a church in Sun City, Arizona, and it's a retirement community. We were not old enough to live in Sun City yet when we joined the church staff there, but eventually, with the passing of time, we were old enough to move into Sun City. That works that way. And so for 6 years, my dad had already had the church for 6 years before we joined. And then another 6 years, we worked together until he retired when he was 78. And at that time, the general church asked us to return as missionaries to Eurasia. So to tell you about the church in Portugal where we lived, we don't have English-speaking churches in Portugal. They're all in Portuguese, so that's not Spanish. We had to learn Portuguese. And I have learned Portuguese well enough to be able to preach in Portuguese, but there's much more that I don't know. And so we have lived there during our tenure in Eurasia. And we would attend church whenever we were in Portugal. The next country over is Spain. And for the last 5 years, I've been the district superintendent of Spain, even though we lived in Portugal. And so I would travel, usually by car, to Spain, and I would visit the churches and work with the pastors there in Spain. The next country over is France, and we would fly to France. We would regularly go to France. We have a missionary who is actually on your prayer list, Brian and Aaron Ketchum. And they would help us translate because we don't speak French, and they don't speak Spanish or Portuguese in France. So now they could speak English, but they won't because they're French. Just by way of explanation there. We had a great relationship with the churches. The churches were very accommodating and friendly to us, and I must explain that each of those countries, Portugal, Spain, and France, all of their churches are actually immigrant churches. In Portugal, they're made up of people from Brazil or Mozambique or Cape Verde. In Spain, they're all a mix of Central and South America. And in France, mostly they're from Haiti. We do have some of the French colonies in Africa. Our district superintendent is from the African country of Chad. And so I obviously they're African. And so they minister there. They all speak French. And so in France, they either come from Haiti or Martinique or from a colony in Africa. We enjoyed ministering with them. And the next country over is Italy. Now, Italy never had colonies. So the church in Italy is actually Italian. And we had a great relationship with the district superintendent there. His name was Daniel Fink. He actually grew up, the first 10 years of his life, he was in South America. So he spoke Spanish. And then when his family, when he was about 10 years old, they moved to Germany. And so he learned German. When he got to be college age, he went to the Nazarene European Bible College in Busingen, Germany. And there he had to learn English because all the courses were taught by professors from the UK or from the United States. And so all the courses were in English, and he learned English. But while he was in college, he met a young lady from Italy, and they got married. And so over 30 years now, he's been speaking Italian. And so we had a great relationship with Daniel and Vanya, the district superintendent in Italy. They live in Florence, and that's a picture of Florence, although that's not the Nazarene Church in Florence, I have to tell you that. And we would regularly travel to Florence and had a great relationship with Daniel and Vanya. Now, this just to give you the idea of the size of Eurasia, it actually begins out in the Atlantic with the Azores Islands. They belong to Portugal, but it's a two-hour airplane flight from Lisbon to the Azores. We have a church in the Azores, and Sin and I would go to the Azores occasionally to participate in the church there. And so the Azores is a different time zone than Portugal. Portugal is the UK Greenwich Mean Time. And the next country over, Spain, France, and Italy, they're a different time zone. And so when you're looking at that map from the Azores to the far end of Russia, that's 14 time zones out of 24. I've had people guess, oh, there must be 100. No, there's 24 hours in a day. So there's 24 time zones, and that's 14 of the 24. When I was in seminary in Kansas City, I had a retired missionary from Africa who was my main professor for missions, and he was always talking about the diverse cultures of Africa. Well, I'm not denying that there's diverse culture in Africa, but recently I was in a service and there was a missionary kid who had grown up in Africa, and he said, yeah, there's a lot of culture in Africa, but when you're talking an area that big, there's more there. And so I hope you got a National Geographic view of Eurasia in that video. When we're in the Asia part of Eurasia, Sina doesn't dress like she would here in the West. She dresses more like more accommodating to that culture. And as missionaries, it's not our role to make people Western or American. We fit into their culture. We eat what they feed us. And probably some of the more exotic things I've eaten haven't been so much in Asia as much as it was in Ecuador. But that's, we'll save that for another time. The real reason we were sent to Eurasia was to work with the Jesus film. Now, we don't show the Jesus film in Europe. It would not be effective. I was sharing in Kansas. This is our 12th district tour. We came back to the U.S. in December of last year, and we have two more districts in Ohio in November, and then we'll be done by Thanksgiving time. So we've been traveling a lot and sharing in churches. And I was sharing in a church in Kansas, and the pastor spoke up. And he said, in our community, now that's in the Bible Belt of the United States. He said, in our community, we passed out 6,000 copies of the Jesus film and got zero response. That would be the same in Europe. So we don't show the film in Europe. We show the film in these five countries. The large yellow country is Pakistan. And for security purposes, the church never allowed me to go to Pakistan. The small country above is Nepal, the yellow country. And off to the side is Bangladesh. And down below, the island is Sri Lanka. Now, I don't speak any of those languages either. The large gray country is India. And the Church Nazarene is active in all of those countries. And when we first started, we had 220 teams working in those countries. Currently, because of COVID and other factors, we have, I think the bulletin said 192. And so the numbers have dwindled some, but they're still active and working. And each of those teams had to give a monthly report. And that monthly report ended up with Cinda. And she would compile those reports and send them on to Jesus Film Harvest Partners in Olathe, Kansas. And each monthly report consisted of five elements. How many times had they shown the film? How many people came to see the film? How many people accepted Christ? And how many of those people were in discipleship? Because Jesus didn't say, go make converts. Jesus said, go make disciples. And many of these people, if they had heard of Jesus, they didn't know who Jesus was, but they needed to be discipled as to how their relationship with Jesus was to play out in their daily life. Another misconception that many of them had, and you may as well, many of them thought that Christianity was a religion. Islam is a religion. Hinduism is a religion. Buddhism is a religion. But Christianity is a relationship. And if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, you're not a Christian. I mean, that's pretty blunt, but that's a reality. And so these people had heard of Christianity, but especially in India, where the British had been in control for 200 years, they thought that to be Christian, you had to be British, or maybe Western, or maybe white. And so they had a very narrow idea of what Christianity was and who could become a Christian. But when they see the Jesus film, they see Jesus speaking to them in their language, because the Jesus film has been translated into over 1,600 languages. And I was in India, and I went to an office, like a tech lab, I guess you could say, and there was a man sitting in front of what the best thing I, you know, like in my generation, it's kind of like a microfiche, but it was a video. And so he would just watch a very short clip of the Jesus film, and then he would speak into a microphone in whatever language he spoke. And then he would make, just like our daughter did for that video, that was our daughter speaking, and I watched her do it, she could reduce or elongate the phrase that she just read into the microphone to fit the image on the screen. And that's what he was doing with the Jesus film. He was translating the Jesus film into a new language. And so it was exciting to see that. So people hear Jesus speaking to them in their language. They come to realize that Jesus isn't for the West. Jesus is for them. And they're amazed at the miracles that they see that he performs. But Paul wrote something that I want to share with you today that applies even to today. And it's in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. Now, in verse 14, he ends verse 14 by saying, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Well, that would be Jesus. Isn't that correct? In whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So he's talking about Jesus. So he continues in verse 15. So just let me use the word Jesus. Instead of the pronoun he. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that everything he might have the supremacy. Many of the people that we minister to in India, for example, grew up Hindu. And one woman wrote that as far back as her family tree went, they were always Hindus. And she said, I grew up Hindu. We worship idols. And we need to be careful when people become Christians in these parts of the world, that they understand, just as Paul said, that in everything he might have the supremacy. Hindus have 30,000 gods. And we don't want them to think that Jesus is 30,001. And so this lady wrote, I now know that he is the one true God. That pretty much sealed it. That it, in everything, he might have the supremacy. That's what Paul wrote. And that's played out today, even in places like India. Now, I've never met Paul personally in all my travels. I never had opportunity to meet Paul. But I have been to the church that Thomas started in India. Now, you know, in some ways, India is very advanced. In other ways, it's very primitive. I can only imagine what India would have been like in the first century when Thomas went to India. You know, Doubting Thomas? He got over that. And he started the church. He founded the church in India. And I have been to that church that he founded in India. Now, you know, there's some debate as to whether Paul was the first missionary or Thomas, but we have God's word for us here that Paul wrote, and so when Paul wrote these words that have now been translated for us into English, said Jesus is the image of the invisible God. I need to help Paul in his writing, because what he meant to say was Jesus is the visible image of the invisible God. Jesus is the visible image of the invisible God. When he was Saul, he was persecuting people who claimed that there was a visible image of the invisible God. He only wanted to worship the invisible God. And he was on his way to Damascus to arrest the leaders of the church when he encountered the visible image of God. He had an experience on the Damascus road, and he saw Jesus in heaven, the visible image of the invisible God. And people see the Jesus film, and for them it is the visible image of the invisible God. And they place their faith in him. And just like we read about in the Gospels, people are healed of all kinds of diseases. We receive testimonies in these monthly reports. People who are healed of leprosy. People who are healed of tuberculosis. People who are healed of cancer. Jesus is still performing miracles today. People place their faith in Jesus, and he transforms their life. Now he's interested in having a relationship with them, but not just a relationship with Jesus, but a relationship with one another. One woman had accepted Jesus, and she asked the Jesus Film team to pray for her home. She said, "My adult son is an alcoholic, and when he comes home, he beats me up. Our home is in chaos. Would you pray for my son?" And at a later date, they showed the film in that area, and the son accepted Jesus. And now the lady testified that now there is peace in my home because that relationship has been restored. Jesus is interested in relationships. Now in Mark's gospel, Mark chapter 2, verse 15, Jesus is eating at Levi's house. Now Levi is Matthew. He was a tax collector. And the Pharisees were offended that Jesus was eating with them, and he asked Jesus' disciples, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? And so Jesus gives this answer, but he doesn't really answer the question, in my opinion. Now, I'll tell you why Jesus ate with tax collectors and sinners, because he wanted to have a relationship with them. If he did not eat with them, if he refused to eat with them, he would not have had a relationship with them. He would not have been able to minister to them. And as missionaries, you know, as small as it seems, eating with people is a big part of what we do. It's a way we establish relationship with people. And so we have done that all these years. And we have established relationship with people. But we had a situation in Sri Lanka. And the Jesus Film team, I had won their trust to the point they were able to share with me challenges that they had. Now, in those countries, the challenge is that they come from a shame-based society. And so they don't want to share problems because it would bring shame upon themselves or maybe even shame upon their boss. And so they shared, I finally got their trust, and they shared a situation. As I was encouraging them to give us good stories from the Jesus film, their good testimonies, they said, well, sometimes we have healings, and other times, you know, things don't work out. And they shared how they were showing the film in a village, and in the village was a mafia-type individual. He was a loan shark. And he had come to see the film, and so everybody's kind of nudging each other, like watching this loan shark. And they were just sure that he was going to accept Jesus and his life would be transformed, because isn't that what Jesus does? And the guy was watching the Jesus film attentively until they came to the story of Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus stood up and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor. And if I robbed anybody of anything, I will give them back four times. And the loan shark got up and left. And they said, we thought, you know, we were going to have a real miracle, and our miracle just walked out the door. But it was a learning, opportunity for me with them. I said, you don't save people. Missionaries don't save people. We plant seeds. And the reason he left was because he was under conviction, and the Holy Spirit will continue to work on him. And it's the Holy Spirit that draws him in a relationship with God. And so we've had opportunity to work with the Jesus film in these countries and in these cultures, and eat with them and have fellowship with them and have relationship with them. And so it's been great. For the region, we were over Work and Witness. Now, when we were in Ecuador, I went out with work teams and actually built buildings, or medical teams, or evangelism teams. But I need you to understand something. Maybe you don't have a good understanding of what Work and Witness is. There is involved in Work and Witness oftentimes building a building. But people typically take pictures that they take back home, and it may be some of the work, but in their memory, as they're sharing, and over the following years, they will remember a relationship that they established, maybe with Jose, or with Juan, or someone that they had an opportunity to work with, a national that they worked with. And so when they think of missions, those images will come to their mind, because our ministry is really about establishing relationships. And that's why, if you've ever had an opportunity to go on Work and Witness, it's addictive. You want to go again. Not because you enjoy building a building or getting sweaty and working hard. It's because of the relationships that you establish. And also, we were involved in Alabaster. Now, I was the regional coordinator for Alabaster for the Eurasia region. And I suspect that here in your church in September and February, you take Alabaster offerings. And all that money would eventually trickle down to the Eurasia region. And so I would have opportunities to distribute that money as requests would come in. Now, it's not a welfare program. We have a saying in Spanish that everybody has to give their grain of sand. And so what that means is that a local church has to be a participant in the program of the church, in the ministry of the church, in giving. And so many of them are giving to Alabaster as well. And so there were three main questions on the application form that I would receive. How much did the local church give to WEF, W-E-F, the World Evangelism Fund? Or are they participating in the global plan of the church for missions? Did they participate in WEF? Did they participate with the district? And did the district participate with WEF? So, because we want everybody to be a participant. And so it was thrilling to work with churches with Alabaster, and I had opportunity to distribute that. I didn't get a salary from it, but that was my role on the region. And I'm going a little over because I had to cut my 3 hours down normally that I take. But that little picture right in the middle, I want to tell you a quick story. That's Vanya, Daniel's wife. She's the missionary president for the District of Italy. And when Sin and I had gone to Florence, and we were preparing for a Work and Witness team that was going to be coming, we had gone to arrange hotels to house the team. And Vanya said, we have a special presentation this Sunday. A little boy named Samuel, he's 10 years old. He He had heard in Sunday school that there was a regional contest for the alabaster box decorating contest. And so he took a shoebox and cut a slit in it and wrapped it in paper and drew on it and put decals on it and everything. And he had won the contest for the region. Those 14 time zones. This little 10-year-old boy in Italy. Now, he was Hispanic. And in the Florence church, there's a Spanish congregation that meets in the afternoon. And he was Hispanic, but because of his mother's work schedule, she would drop him off at the Italian congregation in the morning, and she'd go to work. And so Vanya took charge of Samuel, and he had heard in Sunday school about this contest, and he had won for the region. Now, the Sunday of this presentation, the mother had asked off work, so she was there. And the father, who normally didn't attend church, he was there with a video camera. You can't see it, but he's off to one side videotaping the whole thing. And so Vanya gave him a backpack, and that was his prize. But inside the backpack, there was a T-shirt from somewhere on the camp, somewhere on the region. And there was a yo-yo, and there was a Frisbee, and an Evangel cube. And so she presented all these prizes, and then the service went on, and Daniel preached in Italian. And we didn't understand it, but we somewhat do. It's close enough to Portuguese and Italian and Spanish that we can somewhat follow Italian. But in the back, Samuel and his family were seated. And so after the service, I went up to congratulate Samuel. Now, I don't speak Italian, but he speaks Spanish. And so I greeted him in Spanish. And in his hand, out of all those prizes, in his hand he was holding the Evangel cube. And I said to him, "Would you like to see how that works?" And he said, "See." That means yes. And so I opened it. It was still in the box. I opened it, and I showed him the gospel presentation with the Evangel cube, and he was like a sponge. He listened attentively. Later, Vanya told me that the father was videotaping over my shoulder, the father who never attended church. But I know that the family was so proud of Samuel that they went home, and over the next few weeks, I'm sure they watched that video a number of times. Missionaries don't save people. Missionaries plant seeds. And we had an opportunity to plant a seed right there in the church in Florence to a Spanish-speaking man in an Italian church. Because God provides opportunities like that. And as the pastor indicated earlier, if you would like to take a prayer card of ours and remember us in prayer, we would appreciate it. And not only us, but the people who have taken our place, because we're not going back to Eurasia, we're not going back to Portugal, we're retiring. And this is our last year. And as of January 8th, I'm off the payroll. So remember to pray for us and for the people who are taking our place, because others have taken our various roles. God bless you. Thank you.